Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Aaron, thanks very much. Good evening. Tonight, with the coronavirus death toll approaching 47,000, the White House appears to be choosing loyalty and political concerns over science or even the simple truth. Today, the government doctor, who was until just days ago in charge of the federal vaccine effort, sought whistleblower protection. He said he was sidelined because he chose science over unproven and potentially deadly drugs favored by President Trump. And Rick Bright, that's his name, Rick Bright's sudden removal from his job as director of the Biomedical Advanced Research and Development Authority, or BARDA, appears to be part of a pattern, in his case, apparently punishing a career professional. Also, according to new reporting tonight in the Wall Street Journal, threatening to fire another, and this evening, yet another scientist, was forced to publicly attempt to backtrack on something he himself admits he said. The director of the Centers for Disease Control and Protection was brought to the podium late today by the president to disavow his own words on national television. So let's start with that first. This is what Dr. Robert Redfield actually said to the Washington Post about what might happen if a second wave of the virus hits during flu season. The article was published yesterday, made headlines around the world. In fact, Dr. Redfield himself liked the article enough to promote it on Twitter. As you can see right there from his tweet, he tweeted out a link to that article last night, and here's part of what he said in that article, quote, "There's a possibility that the assault of the virus on our nation next winter will actually be even more difficult than the one we just went through. And when I've said this to others, they kind of put their head back. They don't understand what I mean," end quote. So again, he tweeted out a link to the story last night. Now, a little less than 24 hours later, at tonight's briefing at the White House, the president said Redfield was misquoted, and he called Redfield to the podium to say that what he said didn't actually mean what his words actually said. But they did. Let's listen.
"I didn't say that this was going to be worse. I said it was going to be more complicated or more difficult and potentially complicated because we'll have flu and coronavirus circulating at the same time. The key to my comments, and the reason that I really wanted to stress them, was to appeal to the American public to embrace the flu vaccine with confidence. One of the greatest tools we have as we go through the fall, winter season that we're into, is to get the American public to embrace the influenza vaccine and thereby minimize the impact of flu to be the co-respiratory disease that we confront."
Okay, so just to be absolutely clear, in introducing Dr. Redfield, the president said he took issue with the way the piece was headlined, which he called totally fake. It originally read, "CDC director warns second wave of coronavirus this winter will likely be worse." It now reads, "CDC director warns second wave of coronavirus is likely to be even more devastating." Neither of which appear to inaccurately characterize what Dr. Redfield actually said, which is that the next wave could be even more difficult than this one. In any case, keeping him honest, the president can say, as he did at the briefing, that the doctor was totally misquoted, and he can make the doctor get up and try to toe the line. But when asked about precisely that tonight, Dr. Redfield at the podium took issue with the way the piece was headlined, but admitted that he was accurately quoted. Again, just to remind you, and not to let falsehood have the last word, here again is what he actually said. Quote, "There's a possibility that the assault of the virus on our nation next winter will actually be even more difficult than the one we just went through. And when I've said this to others, they kind of put their head back. They don't understand what I mean." And when asked about protests against stay-at-home orders and the president calling on states to be liberated, Dr. Redfield told The Washington Post, quote, "It's not helpful." And then to repeat, he tweeted out a link to that story, the same story that he claimed he was disavowing tonight in front of the president. So let's be real. This is part of a pattern. Anthony Fauci, you'll recall, was also sent before cameras to unsay something he said that displeased the president. As we mentioned at the top, Rick Bright now seeking whistleblower status after being pulled from his job because he says he didn't push the president's drug of choice, hydroxychloroquine. Quoting now from a statement that he released late tonight, quote, "I believe this transfer was in response to my insistence that the government invest the billions of dollars allocated by Congress to address the COVID-19 pandemic into safe and scientifically vetted solutions and not in drugs, vaccines, and other technologies that lack scientific merit. He went on to say, I'm speaking out because to combat this deadly virus, science, not politics or cronyism, has to lead the way. The president was asked about it at the briefing and gave a familiar answer.
Mr. President, I want to ask you about Rick Bright. He's the head of the federal agency in charge of getting a vaccine out to Americans once it's ready. He says he has been pushed out of his job because he raised questions about hydroxychloroquine and some of your directives on that. Was he pushed out of that job?
I never heard of him. You just mentioned a name. I never heard of him. When did this happen?
This happened today.
Well, I never heard of him. If the guy says he was pushed out of a job, maybe he was, maybe he wasn't. You'd have to hear the other side. I don't know who he is.
Well, he is one of the many professionals trying to do their jobs, which in this case is trying to save lives, which is also what CDC official Nancy Messonnier was doing when she warned in late February that community spread of coronavirus was likely. Tonight, The Wall Street Journal is reporting that the president was so angry he called the Secretary of Health and Human Services and threatened to fire her for telling the truth. The president calls himself a wartime president, and truth, it seems, is the first, last, and constant casualty in this war. More now from CNN Chief White House Correspondent Jim Acosta. So what are you learning about Rick Bright and and the clash that's happening here?
He sounds like he's the casualty, Anderson, of the president's war on scientists, war on science in the administration. Dr. Bright is going to file a whistleblower complaint. He is protesting his removal from his position, leading that agency that is charged with vaccine development. He was working on a vaccine for the coronavirus when he was abruptly pulled out of his position. He had been clashing with top officials at Health and Human Services, but it was basically over the points that he raises in this lengthy statement that was released to reporters earlier today, essentially saying that he protested inside HHS this tendency on the part of the president, other administration officials, to show preference for treatments like hydroxychloroquine when the science is just not even settled on that, and there are studies showing it doesn't work. And when this doctor, Dr. Bright, raised questions about it, he is saying he was ousted from his position. And talking to a source familiar with the situation this evening, Anderson, we are told that he hasn't even been told what he's going to be doing over at the National Institutes of Health. And so it sounds like he's been pushed out of this job into another job, and he doesn't even know what that job's going to be yet.
What is his next step?
I mean, at this point, he is saying he is going to be fighting for his job. According to the source we spoke with earlier this evening, he's going to be fighting for this job. He wants to be reinstated back in his position over at that agency. But you heard the president there a few moments ago essentially pouring cold water on that idea, saying, well, maybe he was pushed out. Maybe he wasn't. Anderson, from all appearances, he was absolutely pushed out. And that is what Dr. Bright is saying. And it sounds as though he's going to have his chance to make his case. I will point out, though, Dr. Anthony Fauci, who appeared at the briefing this evening, seemed to say that Dr. Bright is going to be welcomed over at NIH and be given some important responsibilities. But it's not clear whether or not Dr. Bright has been informed of that yet.
Jim Acosta, Jim, stay with us. I want to bring in our chief medical correspondent, Dr. Sanjay Gupta, and CNN's chief political analyst, Gloria Borger. Sanjay, the president stressed coronavirus may not come back in the fall and said there may be, quote, embers. Have you seen any evidence that what we're going to be dealing with in the fall are just coronavirus embers?
No, I mean, the virus is the virus. I mean, the virus is probably the one constant in this whole equation. We have to continue to be able to react to this virus, which, you know, may continue to be these physical distancing measures and probably really spearheaded, as we've talked about so many times, by testing, finding people who are infected, isolating them, finding their contacts, all that. But the virus is not going away. I mean, it's here. It's a contagious virus. It can be lethal in certain cases, as we know. Ultimately, a vaccine may inoculate us against the virus, which would be great and a real significant development. But this is part of our human environment now, this virus. So it's not going away. How we react to it is what may change.
Gloria, I mean, this is the second time a doctor has clarified their remarks at the podium or been brought up to clarify, even though what Dr. Redfield was clarifying, it was exactly what he had said. So last week it was Dr. Fauci, nice, after he told Jake Tapper that mitigation could have saved lives. Tonight it was Dr. Redfield. I'm wondering what you make of this pattern.
Well, first of all, I think it's a disgusting pattern, honestly. These are professionals who choose their words carefully. And, you know, if you looked at the picture tonight of Dr. Redfield standing up there and the president standing to his side, looking like the executioner who could chop off his head at any time and fire him if he wanted to, and we know the president can do that. And still, what he did was he got up there and he effectively, he couched it, but he effectively said what he said. And he said the Washington Post was accurate. And I would argue that Tony Fauci did exactly the same thing when he stood up there. And I think perhaps the reason they all still have their jobs, because the president would probably like to get rid of anyone who disagrees with him or challenges him or gets him in trouble with the public, is that he looks at the polls and he understands that the scientists are trusted more by the American public than he is. And so he needs them right now. He needs them in his corner. As angry as it might make him, it would be very difficult for him to get rid of them.
Jim, it's interesting. You know, the president said he'd never heard of Rick Bright. Maybe he has never heard of Rick Bright. It is kind of his go-to thing of, you know, people he says he's never heard of them. And then, of course, you know, it's people he's been photographed with numerous times. It's, you know, the Lev Parnas, right, who was working with Rudy Giuliani.
The coffee boy.
Yes. Yeah.
Anderson, it sounds like the excuses we got during the Russia investigation, the various figures of the Russia investigation were the coffee boys. They had more coffee boys than they had coffee during the Russia investigation. And the president seems to be offering up the same excuse about Dr. Rick Bright. The president may not have personally known Dr. Bright, and we don't know that for a fact at this point. We're still digging on that point. But obviously he was known inside HHS because he was clashing with these health officials. And keep in mind, think about where Dr. Bright was standing versus where some of these other top health officials in the administration were standing. President Trump and figures on Fox News have been touting hydroxychloroquine for weeks as a treatment for the coronavirus. Remember the president standing in the briefing room saying, what do you have to lose? What do you have to lose? And so on. And what Dr. Bright was raising internally is that not only do you lose the concept of time because you're being treated with something that may not be effective, but there are also health risks. There are cardiovascular risks with hydroxychloroquine, and that is starting to show up in some of these studies, showing a higher mortality rate and so on. So Dr. Bright was on the side of science. He was on the side of saving lives. And it sounds like there were top health officials he was clashing with who were siding with the president no matter the cost. Mm.
I want to bring in another voice to the conversation now, Lena Sun, who interviewed Dr. Redfield for her report in The Washington Post. Lena, I mean, do you think Dr. Redfield, I'm wondering what you make of what you just witnessed of him at the podium, because, I mean, it seemed like the president was saying he was going to walk back what he said to you in the interview, but he actually did just verify that, in fact, he was quoted accurately in the interview.
He was quoted accurately. We had a very good conversation. He spent a lot of time talking about the importance of getting flu vaccination and why it was important for Americans to get this message and how the public health officials had to prepare for this summer so that when COVID-19 hits in the fall, which has very similar symptoms to flu, that the public health capacity hospitals would not be overwhelmed. He made this point of saying Americans needed to get the flu vaccination because that way the hospital beds would be available for their mothers and grandmothers who might need it for COVID.
Right. And I mean, that's an important point. As we've pointed out a lot in our coverage, there many Americans do not get the flu vaccine, even though it has, you know, it is as deadly as it is. I mean, the flu is a dangerous thing and people die of it every year. The president said today that the headline to your story was, quote, totally inaccurate. I just want to put the headline up on the screen, which is, quote, CDC director warns second wave of coronavirus is likely to be even more devastating. I mean, just from a factual standpoint, saying it's more devastating, likely to be more devastating and more difficult is essentially the same thing. If a deadly virus is more difficult, I mean, it's more devastating. But wondering what your response is to the president's about issue with the wording.
It's sort of use your common sense. If you have this COVID-19, if coronavirus now is hitting the United States, and it took place after flu season had already waned. And you're seeing overwhelming stress on hospitals, lack of protective equipment, lack of ventilators. Just imagine what it would be like if it hit at the same time as flu in the fall. And Dr. Redfield himself said that we were lucky that it didn't hit at the same time as flu this year, because, and then he in his quote that I quoted him, he said it would be very, 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 I think he used four varies, difficult on the health system capacity. So you take all those things, flu at the same time as coronavirus, and if people don't get vaccinated, the rush to hospitals, it is just common sense of the portrait would be, when he says very difficult and people not understanding what he means, it means that he is drawing this picture for Americans of how bad it could be. That seems to me the definition of devastating.
And bottom line, you stand by your story.
We stand by my story. I stand by my story. And Dr. Redfield said he was quoted accurately. And I would just point out, Anderson, that after the story posted, he also tweeted and encouraged people to read the story.
Yeah, we put up his tweet earlier. Lena, I appreciate your reporting. Sanjay, I want to turn to the situation in Georgia. The president said this evening he disagrees with the governor's decision to open businesses this Friday, nail salons, massage therapy spas, and the like. Dr. Fauci said he would urge the governor to be careful. As a resident of Georgia, as a physician, are there any signs that the government is listening? Because it doesn't seem like it.
No. And in fact, just over the last few minutes, Governor Kemp has now responded to what President Trump said. And President Trump said he strongly disagrees with Governor Kemp's decision to reopen things in Georgia. As you just mentioned, Dr. Fauci says he would advise him against it. Yesterday, Ambassador Burke said, look, there's still outbreaks going on. We've made very clear the data. This doesn't seem to meet the guidelines, meet the gating criteria. And what we just heard, Anderson, is that that's not going to change a thing in the governor's mind. He's still planning on moving forth with this plan to start reopening things on Friday. Hair salons, nail salons, tattoo parlors, I guess, whatever
sure.
It might be. All these things
don't
potentially.
Don't pretend you don't know about tattoos, Sanjay. I'm kidding. Sorry. I don't think you're a tattoo guy.
How do you physically distance at those sorts of places? I still don't. I mean, I think a lot of people are just thinking common sense here, and it just doesn't fit.
Yeah, and restaurants and theaters on Monday, according to the governor in Georgia. Dr. Sanjay Gupta, thank you. Jim Acosta, Gloria Borgia, Lena Sun, thank you very much. Still to come tonight, the mayor of Las Vegas wants to end her state's stay-at-home order now, wants casinos and hotels and restaurants to open now, something health officials say should not happen. It's not what the governor of Nevada thinks. We're going to show you my interview with the mayor from earlier today. Afterward, I'm going to talk with the man who issued the order, the governor of Nevada. And later, former Health and Human Services Secretary Kathleen Sebelius joins me to discuss the president's politicization of testing and the president's take on a possible second wave of coronavirus. Dr. Anthony Fauci appeared at the White House coronavirus news conference today for the first time in 5 days with a plea to America's leaders who want to reopen their local economies. He acknowledged what he called the urge we all have to get out there and get it over with, but he said not to leapfrog over things. Do it in a measured way, he said. Otherwise, there'll be a rebound. The mayor of Las Vegas believes otherwise. She's called the closing of casinos and the efforts by the governor of Nevada to keep people at home over the last few weeks insanity. I spoke to Mayor Carolyn Goodman earlier today about why she believes casinos and theaters and hotels and restaurants should reopen now. The conversation went on for more than 25 minutes. We're going to play you about 15 minutes of it for you because we think it's important to try to understand the thinking of, in this case, the mayor of Las Vegas. Afterwards, we'll talk to the governor of Nevada. Thanks so much for being with us, Mayor. You say that you assume everyone has the virus and is just asymptomatic. You want casinos open, Vegas back in business. Is that a responsible call to make?
That wasn't the call that I was really making. It was to get people back to work. We have so many in our hospitality crew. Probably we're 2.5 million people down here in Southern Nevada, and we have so many out of work because of
the casinos open, yes?
Well, that's a piece of it. I want the hotel rooms open. We have 155,000 hotel rooms, right. And most of our people who live here and are part of the population are hooked to those hotel rooms in some way or ancillary way.
So you want, like, hotel rooms, casinos, the theaters open? I mean, you want Vegas back in business, no?
I want our restaurants open. I want our small businesses open. I want our people back in employment. We have so many families that can't even afford to get the groceries for their family because they've been out of work for 6 weeks.
But casinos, you want them open because obviously visitors are not going to come without casinos and shows and things.
Well, no, they'll come because they love. We've got major league sports here, and we've got so many canceled. I'd love everything open because I think we've had viruses for years that have been here.
I mean, you're talking about encouraging hundreds of thousands of people to come to Las Vegas.
Back.
I get the financial losses people are suffering, which is awful. But you're encouraging, I mean, hundreds of thousands of people coming there. In casinos, smoking, drinking, touching slot machines, breathing circulated air, and then returning home to states around America and countries around the world. Doesn't that sound like a virus petri dish? I mean, how is that?
No, what it sounds like, you're being an alarmist. I'm not. I've lived a long life. I grew up in the heart of Manhattan. I know what it's like to be with subways and on buses and crammed into elevators. I think you are by saying what you have just said.
So you don't believe there should be any social distancing? You don't believe that this is
a... Of course I believe there should be. Of course. I'm a
rational... How do you do that in a casino?
That's up to them to figure out. I don't own a casino. I don't know anything
about building a casino. Wait a minute. I'm sorry. You're the mayor of Las Vegas, and you want casinos to be open, even though you have no authority, thankfully, over casinos. But you say open them up, but you have no responsibility about how that would be done safely?
No, you're blurring. No, you're blurring.
You said it's not your job.
There. I am not a private owner of a hotel. I wish I were. And I would have the cleanest hotel with 6 feet figured out for every human being comes
so
in there.
If you can't figure out how to do this safely, why, as mayor of a city that you were responsible for the people's safety, are you calling for something that you have no plan for how it would be done safely?
I am not a private owner. That's the competition in this country, the free enterprise, and to be able to make sure that what you offer the public meets the needs of the public. Right now, we're in a crisis health-wise, and so for a restaurant to be open or a small boutique to be open, they better figure it out. That's their job. That's not the mayor's job.
What are you doing as mayor to improve contact tracing and testing in Las Vegas?
Well, first of all, as someone who's pretty sure she possibly had it in January, I have already been into the hospital to say, take my plasma.
Well, I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about what are you doing as mayor to improve contact tracing?
I'm calling upon everyone to go ahead, if they're positive, to go ahead and see if they can help be in part of the preventive or the treatment pool that will have this plasma available.
Are you doing anything on testing and contact tracing? Because in order to open businesses, every scientist says that is essential.
I don't have that. Well, no, that's for our scientists. And the whole thing is fact. Truth,
but you're,
validated
data. Right, fact, you're calling for businesses to reopen. Every scientist and person who looks at this says what we really need to do that is more testing
more
contact tracing.
That can't work. We're not getting the truth. And I know over the years, going back to the 1950s with the atomic bomb, don't worry about it when we're testing in Nevada. You'll all be fine. Take a shower. The reality is
you're the one saying you'll all be fine. What we're saying is testing and contact.
You're putting words in my mouth. I said, open up Las Vegas. Let us get started and go back to work.
What are you doing to encourage?
Can't even feed their families or take care of their families.
I get the pain that's out there, and it's real, and I'm not minimizing that at all.
Is.
I'm just asking you as mayor, what are you doing to improve testing, make it more accessible, and improve contact tracing? Because every scientist who you say you listen to will tell you that's what you need in order to get online as fast as possible. What are you doing?
Every single email that comes in with offers to give us the kits and get everything here, I send it up to the people in the hospitals for them to filter through to find out if these test kits and everything that's being offered and provided.
You said in another interview that you talked to Los Angeles Mayor Eric Garcetti.
Yes,
if you actually
talk
to if you talk to Mayor Garcetti, he's doing everything he can to improve testing in Los Angeles.
I think that's wonderful. And I,
you said it's not your job.
Wait, no, it is not part of our job. That's part of our health department, part of our hospital jobs, our labs. Those are the ones who are the experience.
Well,
and
the
just
governor
everything
says,
being fan.
The
it's
governor
fine.
Says
I
that,
admire our governor. And
right. The governor says, unfortunately, I've known the mayor. I don't need politicians weighing in on what what's the best date would be.
I am a politician.
I need doctors and medical sound advice.
No, no, no. And who are his people? And are they, in fact, the best that we can have? I'm assuming yes. And all I'm doing is asking for a plan so I can tell our people who are calling by the thousands, when are they going to get a paycheck? How can they get a roof over their heads? I am down in the groundwork with the people who've made this city what it is, who've come here to live, come here to build it, and we were not broken, and we need to get back to work. That's it.
There's a Chinese researchers have shown how this virus spreads. And I just want to put up for our viewers. This is a restaurant.
Anderson, you are tough.
No, I'm not
We're
talking
back
I just,
to China. This isn't China. Yeah, this is Las Vegas, Nevada.
Wow. OK, that's really ignorant. This is a restaurant. And the
that's
yellow circle,
to say
that's an ignorant statement. That's a restaurant. And yes, it's in China, but there are human beings, too. That yellow is a person who is asymptomatic and infected. And all those other red circles are other diners who that one diner passed the virus to. All those other people became infected in a restaurant that had air conditioning, and they believe it was the air conditioning which helped the virus
and
spread to all those other people.
You remember the Legionnaire's disease in 1976 in Philadelphia came all through the air conditioning. You don't remember because you're younger.
Typhoid Mary,
who I think passed away, well, anyway, during the late 30s, rode the buses, was a cook, and she was asymptomatic, and she spread a fear of getting typhoid, and she never showed a sign of it. And she lived most of her life quarantined. The reality was, I think 58 people passed away from typhoid. And so we're aware of this. We learned from history. Right. We've had Ebola. We've had the West Nile. We've had polio. We've had these horrific,
none of those were as
painful.
Infectious in Las Vegas. I mean, you didn't have people with Ebola on a casino floor. You know what? If you
We don't know that.
Well, yeah, you do, because if you had
A neighbor of mine died from West Nile because the swimming pool on the next property was filled with mosquitoes, and the people who had abandoned the house left the pool full. So we live with this. This is part of life.
Just as mayor,
the
aren't
challenges.
You, as mayor, are you not concerned when you see just that restaurant graphic, how air conditioning spreads this and other people become infected?
Yes, from Legionnaire's disease. That's just what I said. We lost a lot of people in that hotel who had gone ahead and been in the hotel
and there were steps to take to stop that by changing the air filtering, if my memory serves me correct, on Legionnaire's disease. There are not yet the steps to take with this other than social distancing.
Right. So people do that. I mean, I love watching our people here. They're so careful. And even as we have, we work every single day. I have not missed a day. And anybody who is in or comes into the office that needs an appointment or has an issue, they all are with their masks on, or we always enforce social distancing. And the office is absolutely pristine with germ-free.
You're talking about your office.
Well, hopefully everything in the building. We shut down the lobby,
look, Mayor. You love your city, and I get you want it to go back to work, and I totally get that. And you hear from people, and you know you're in a really tough position. I get it, but it just seems really irresponsible, given that, A, you are actually have no responsibility or say over casinos or what happens on the Strip, that you're not doing anything about trying to improve testing like your friend Mayor Garcetti is doing in Los Angeles or improve contact tracing. You're simply sitting there and saying, you know, get back to work, get these casinos open again. And you have no idea or plan, or you've done nothing to try to figure out, well, what's the best way to make that happen? How far apart should, a dealer be from the people? How, you know, should the hours? I mean, you're offering nothing other than being a cheerleader, which I guess is what part of your job is. And I respect that. And you seem like a very nice person. But I don't understand. Do you not have any sense of responsibility if you're calling for something to at least try to work to make it
as safe as possible. If you go back to everything I say, it's been always about putting our workers back to work. It is not about the casinos. It's not about anything other than putting those who've lost their jobs in a city right. that wasn't broken and didn't have disease back to work. We're 2.3 million people here. We have over 3,900
cases in Nevada, 163 deaths, and that's with social distancing.
Nevada.
You're saying there was
Nevada.
You're saying there was no problem in Las Vegas, like there was no disease, there was not the virus in Las Vegas? Because earlier you said you believe everyone's asymptomatic.
I'm sure in January. And I know plenty of people who were coughing. Some had fevers, and if they did, they stayed home because they thought it was the flu. The flu is unbelievably powerful still. And so, of course, we know that. We tried to work on the sensitivities of people to be responsible as to spreading any kind of germ, whether it's the flu.
But don't you think that it's worked in Nevada, in Las Vegas, social distancing? Don't you think it's worked? Because, I mean, 163 deaths... That is, compared to some other states, that's low for those families.
We're 2.3 million people in Southern Nevada, and we've had 150 right. deaths.
We 163, I believe, is the latest number, actually.
Wrong. But that's for Nevada. That's Nevada. This is right. down here, 150. Okay.
But hasn't it been because of social distancing that the numbers have been what they are?
How do you know until we have a control group? We offer to be a control group. Anybody who knows anything about statistics knows that, for instance, you have a vaccine.
You're offering the citizens of Las Vegas to be a control group to see if your theory on social distancing works or doesn't work.
Wrong. Absolutely wrong. Don't put words in my mouth.
You just said we'll be a control group.
Excuse me. What I said was, I offered to be a control group, and I was told by our statistician, you can't do that because people from all parts of Southern Nevada come in to work in the city. And I said, oh, that's too bad, because I know when you have a disease, you have a placebo that gets the water and the sugar, and then you get those that actually get the shot. We would love to be that placebo side so you have something to measure against. So all the data until
you want to get the placebo, you don't want to get the actual...
Are you going to let me finish or not?
The group who gets the placebo, by the way, usually gets the short end of the stick.
Well, you don't know. How do you know
Mayor, if casinos reopen, are you going to be inside those casinos every single night putting your own life on the line?
I have lived in this town for 56 years.
Are you going to go to the casinos every night and put your life on the line like all the workers, you say you were there holding their hands?
They don't need it. We weren't broken. We tragically have 150 people we lost. Tragic. We have 2.3 million people here.
I haven't heard you say yes, that you would be sitting on those casino floors every night along with the people that you say you are holding their hands with.
What is the purpose of that? First of all, I have a family.
Because it would be putting your money. It would be putting money where your mouth is, to use a Las Vegas term.
Wait, Anderson,
if you say it's safe,
Anderson.
Okay, so you're not willing to sit on the casino floors with them when they reopen and breathe the refiltered air.
First of all, I don't gamble. I used to gamble when we first came to town. I don't have the time. I work 7 days a week. I have so many things that I have to attend to. I can't sit on
those floors either. I wouldn't want to sit on the floors either. I'm with you on that one. It went on from there. Joining me now, the governor of Nevada, Steve Sisolak. Governor, thanks for being with us. I'm just wondering what you make of the push by the mayor, who has no responsibility or say over when the casinos actually open, that saying that it should open now and that there was no disease in Las Vegas.
Well, Anderson, I appreciate you having me on and allowing me to respond to some of what she said. We are clearly not ready to open. We have, sadly, since you did that interview, we now have 187 deaths in the state of Nevada, but over 4,100 positive cases. I will not allow the citizens of Nevada, our Nevadans, to be used as a control group, as a placebo, whatever she wants to call it. I certainly will not allow that. I can tell you, our largest trade union on the Strip, Culinary Union 226, lost 11 members. They've lost 11 members to COVID-19 already. And I'm going to do everything I can to make sure they don't lose 11 more.
You know, clearly the, you know, one can quibble with how she, the mayor, says things and her logic or lack thereof. But there is, you know, look, there's certainly a lot of people who want to get back to business. I'm sure you want to get back to business. What do you say, though, to those who say, look, you know, the solution to this is, you know, it's, you know, keeping us all locked up in our homes and socially distant. It's not worth the pain and the cost, economic and, you know, personal to people long term.
Well, I've been saying that for 5 weeks now, Anderson, and you're absolutely right. And I've never been prouder to be in Nevada than I am now, because when we put in restrictions, our executive orders and directives that called for social distancing and they called for hygiene and they called for no large groups and, you know, face coverings, you know, outside of your home, we've been able to keep our numbers as low as they are right now, the 187, 4,100, because of that. And I've got an enormous amount of cooperation from the vast majority of our citizens. Now, there are clearly some that don't see things my way and that they've resisted. But most elected officials, I can tell you, the Mayor of Reno, Hillary Sheevy, and the chair of the Clark County Commission, Marilyn Kirkpatrick, they've done nothing but help me to try to expand our testing, expand our tracing, and to open, at the proper time. Las Vegas is a great place to be. It's a fun time. It's a great place to have a convention, to come for a party, an extended vacation, whatever that may be. And we want to welcome everybody back to Las Vegas. We want to welcome them back to the lights on the Strip, but that's not today and it's not tomorrow. And the resort operators have been incredibly phenomenal partners, great partners in operating this. And Matt Maddox, you might have seen the plan that he came forward that he's proposing to the Gaming Control Board for their opening up. And they put a lot of time and effort into this. But when we do it, we're going to do it right. But I am not going to allow our workers to be put in a position that they have to decide between their job in their paycheck and their life. That's not a fair position to put them in, and I will not allow that to happen.
It also seems to me just a cheap argument to say that it's either open up now or the alternative is destruction, that it's a binary choice of either human health or, you know, lives or economic health. It seems to me just long term for the health of Las Vegas is you want to have confidence. You don't want to have a reopening and then have to then pull back because there's been a huge outbreak. That's going to just long term hurt confidence that people have in, you know, in any community, restaurants or movie theaters or casinos or wherever it may be.
You're absolutely right. That I couldn't have said it better. That's why we need a phased in approach to getting where we need to get to. I'm following medical advice and scientists and statisticians, and they've exposed to me, you know, what we're really dealing with in terms of the metrics and having to follow a graph and, you know, the model that's been established. I look at certain criteria. I look at hospitalizations as it relates to COVID-19, intensive care unit hospitalizations, ventilator usage, percent of positive tests versus tests that we've given. And I need those that have plateaued and begin the trajectory downward. Now, I know people are asking for more clarity and more specificity, but you don't know when you're in the trajectory until you're already partway into the trajectory.
Yeah.
Because you might be a little bit going down for a day or two, three, and then you go up again. I'm listening to the medical people. I'm listening to the scientists. They will decide, along with the virus and behavior of our citizens, when it's time to start reopening in a phased-in approach.
You mentioned the local culinary workers union in Las Vegas. They put out a statement that says, in part, the mayor's statements are outrageous, considering essential frontline workers have been dealing with the consequences of the crisis firsthand. Goes on to say, workplaces need to be safe and healthy, not a petri dish. And I mean, again, these are the workers who are the backbone of that community.
Oh, they're absolutely the backbone, Anderson. They're on the front lines. They're cleaning the rooms. They're serving the meals. They're out on the front edge, you know, being exposed to this. They've lost 11 members. These are 11 lives. And people that are talking about reopening prematurely, I have talked to people who have lost a loved one who, you know, to COVID-19, to people that weren't able to visit a dying parent in a nursing home because they had restrictions on a nursing home. I spent a half hour with our first ground zero patient that we had, a veteran at our veterans home, that came out of a coma that he was in for 30 days, and he thanked me. He said, "Governor, at least I'm going to be able to see my grandchildren someday. Had you not done this, it wouldn't have been possible." It's important that we protect the health and the future and the well-being of our citizens. We can rebuild our economy. We will rebuild our economy. Las Vegas will continue to thrive, but I can't do that if I lose more people. We need to protect their health and their well-being. There will come a time to open Las Vegas in a phased-in approach. And I urge everyone, Nevada has been incredible. The vast majority of citizens are wearing face coverings, they're practicing social distancing, they're doing everything they can. And we need to send a sincere message, you know, and a consistent message. And it's difficult when we get one person that's kind of leading people astray, and then disappointed in that.
Yeah. Governor Sisolak, I appreciate your time and your efforts. Thank you.
Thanks, Anderson. Appreciate the opportunity.
Take care. Coming up next, a former Secretary of Health and Human Services on the need for more testing and the president's apparent war on his own science professionals. We'll be right back. Talking tonight about the need for drastically more testing to safely reopen the economy, also about the president's apparent need for health professionals to toe the party line. Joining us right now is former Sebelius, who served as Health and Human Services Secretary in the Obama administration. Secretary Sebelius, the president differentiating between a second wave of the pandemic being more difficult versus it being more devastating. I mean, is there a difference between those two things in your mind?
No. Either one of them is pretty terrible. What Dr. Redford is talking about is if you have a robust flu season and we never know really what's coming, and you might have a vaccine that's fully effective or you might have a vaccine that's partially effective, we're going to have a lot of patients, as we do every year, already with underlying health conditions, already older, more vulnerable, pregnant women, others who are susceptible to the flu. They will be in hospital beds. They'll be needing the kind of care. And then if you spread COVID-19 on top of that, it could be deadly for even more individuals in this country.
And I mean, yeah, as you said, a second wave of the virus combined with the seasonal flu, which a lot of Americans do not even routinely get a vaccination for.
That's right.
You know, and one of the things that Dr. Redfield was saying, that he was trying to, you know, impress upon people the importance of getting the flu vaccine.
Well, getting it and getting it as early as possible. I mean, we're hoping that the vaccine will be very effective. But again, we've seen the vaccination numbers go up and down. There is a growing group in the country who are anti-vaccination and spread the misinformation on the airwaves. So flu vaccine is not a guarantee of anything, but we hope that there could be a communication plan that starts now to get people ready to get the flu vaccine quickly, and then hopefully to be ready to get the COVID-19 vaccine. There's still a myth that somehow COVID-19 is the flu. So there'll be a lot of people who will feel, oh, well, I'll do one or the other, but I'm not going to do both. That would be a deadly mistake.
You know, it's interesting how much we've just become used to seeing the nation's top scientists filtered through the lens of the White House. I mean, it's rare. I think it'd be in normal times, even in other, you know, health crises, there's been press conferences from the CDC, you know, the head of HHS speaking publicly. Everything now is filtered through the vice president's office, essentially. Is there a chilling effect, it seems like that's intentional.
Well, it's, I think, very intentional. I work for a president who started with the fact that he felt we needed to be guided by the science. And he felt as murky as things were without a vaccine, we hadn't seen the strain of the flu we were dealing with since 1918, that we had to tell people what we knew and what we didn't know and get out of the way and let the scientists, CDC and NIH, talk to the American public. We did twice or three times a day updates on what was happening, when the vaccine would be available, what we knew about it, where it was going to be. But at every point along the way, President Obama resisted political pressure to rewrite CDC guidance or bow to social pressure. He kept saying we have to follow the science and let the public know what the scientists say. I'm very alarmed that you get a lot of political spin before and after scientists talk. We've watched scientists like today be asked to essentially correct what they say, which is absolutely right on target, that this second wave could be indeed much more serious, much more deadly. I have no idea what the White House intends to do once we get closer to either treatment or vaccination, but we've seen the president from the briefing room promote what is totally unproven as an effective treatment and call a drug out by name that needs to go through serious clinical trials. I've never seen that in my life.
Yeah. Secretary Sebelius, I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Sure.
Take a quick look at the lines at a South Florida food donation site as concern grows over problems with the nation's food supply. That's when 360 continues. As the coronavirus death toll nears 47,000, there's growing concern about the nation's food supply. Large meat processing plants are closing because workers have become infected. In South Florida, people who are out of work because of the pandemic lined up today for food donations. Randy Kaye was there.
Let's go. Come on.
This was the scene in Hialeah Gardens, Florida. Cars stretching for miles, all of them waiting for free food. Before dawn, organizers say more than 1,000 cars were waiting.
What time did you come this morning?
4.
4 a.m.?
Yes.
Some came as early as 2 a.m., sleeping in their cars for more than 6 hours before the food line opened.
Good morning. Buenos dias.
More than 60 volunteers showed up to help distribute potatoes, fruit, pickles, and chicken. Lots of it.
How much chicken you think you're giving away today?
I don't know, but it's a lot.
Much of the food gathered by the nonprofit group FarmShare was purchased from farmers so it wouldn't go to waste.
And we've seen probably the biggest need in the history of FarmShare during this pandemic.
¿Tiene hambre? Are you hungry?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yes.
Many who came to pick up food told me they've lost their job and are running out of food at home.
No dinero, no trabajo, no job, no money.
No money.
So you're coming for the food.
He told me he's been out of work for weeks and has no food at home. Same story for this man.
Do you need food badly?
Yeah. I'm not working at this moment. It's very fine.
You're not working, so you need food.
Yeah, I'm not working. I need food for my family.
And the fact that it's free, so that helps.
Yeah, it's good. Good idea.
Because you don't have the money to pay for it right now.
Yeah, I know.
Each family takes home about 15 pounds of food. During this pandemic, FarmShare has given away nearly 5 million pounds of food to families in Miami-Dade County, one of the hardest hit.
When they first started doing these food giveaways in early March, they were serving about 400 families. Here, they expect to serve about 1,400 families. So clearly, the word has spread, and so has the desperation for food.
Cesar Borrello is a flight attendant. He's barely working and has much less money coming in.
Now we have 3 adults and 2 kids.
So that's a lot of mouths to feed.
Oh, yeah. Yes, it is.
Some people tell me they are rationing and not eating as much at home. Are you doing that?
Yeah, we are doing also. We organize the menus and, you know, kind of with this all the time.
Still, despite his cut in pay, he thinks it's a mistake for neighboring Georgia to start reopening businesses later this week to get the economy going again.
It's too soon. I've kept being, you know, safe at home at the moment. Keep the distance.
Randy Kaye, CNN, Hialeah Gardens, Florida.
A lot of good groups doing food banks and food delivery. The news continues. I want to hand it over to Chris Cuomo for Cuomo Primetime.
Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.